Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the heart of the future Liberty State. The last episode for 2021, brought to you once again by On Fire Ministries and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about a biblical worldview being the lens through which we view everything, about our hope not being in man but in Jesus Christ, and about not ending in prayer but moving to action. The gospel of the kingdom. Isaiah 61, 1 through 4. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord anointed me to bring good news to the humble. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim release to captives and freedom to prisoners, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant those who mourn in Zion, giving them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the cloak of praise instead of a disheartened spirit. So they will be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Then they will rebuild the ancient ruins. They will raise up the former devastations, and they will repair the ruined cities, the desolations of many generations. Well, today we have a special guest coming on, Joel Skousen, here at the bottom of the hour. And what a great guest to have on as a year-end wrap-up. We are in a time right now where Holy Spirit is pouring out. Yesterday, actually 2 days ago, here at On Fire Ministries, we saw someone healed of a stroke, medically documented. God is wanting his sons, his daughters, to step into the role that he has prepared for them, step into the destiny that he has prepared for them, and become the sons and daughters in his kingdom. Not just talk about it or believe it, but become it and pray that way. It's a paradigm shift that I was talking with a friend of mine earlier this week about, that we need to embrace in the body of Christ. We're going to see greater things than these in this time. And yes, the enemy is raging, but the enemy is only raging because God is already on the move. Keep that in your heart, that no matter what happens, God has put you in this time. He's put me in this time for such a time as this. If you listen to Patriot Radio, you know the signs of the times. What are you going to do about it? And have you even prayed that way? Has God revealed it to you? This is what I want you to do in this time. And have you obeyed him? I was talking to a group of pastors here earlier this week about this exact issue. Do we actually believe what we say we believe? And if God's telling us to do so, are we doing it? Are we preparing for this time? I believe the American readout is a refuge, a safe haven. I believe that's why a lot of the attacks came over the last 12 years, because certain entities realized that's what this place is. People have had dreams. They've felt led to move here, but the enemy also recognized it. And today, we are now more prepared than ever to be that safe haven, to be that refuge, to be that light on the hill, to shine forth throughout the entire country, to throughout the entire world, and give hope, give courage, to embolden people that are struggling in places like Australia and New Zealand. And I just want to give a special shout out to our listeners in New Zealand and Australia who are fighting back right now. They are standing up right now. It's just not being televised. We're with you. To our friends in Poland and Romania and Ukraine, we are with you. It's time for us as Christians to pull that lampstand from out underneath the bed, from underneath that basket, set it up on the hill, and allow Christ to shine brightly through us and to become that light ourselves, to embrace it as our identity. When you are unafraid and you charge out, other people see that, they will go with you. It gives them courage. It encourages them. It puts courage into them in their hearts. So as we come into New Year, I want you to be praying. We have 72 hours of prayer. People are signing up. You can register for it. You can find it on the church app, or you can just email us here at hello@spokaneonfire.church. You can sign up and be part of this movement for the first 72 hours of this coming year of 2022 to bring it in. What does God want us to do in this time? What do we need to be praying for and about? And this Saturday, here at On Fire Ministries, at 10:30, so New Year's Day, we're going to be here, we're going to be praying and worshiping, bringing in the new year by giving our attention to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, our Savior Jesus Christ. And that brings me now to your intelligence briefing. Coming to us on the international front from Debka File. Iran's guards drill, so their Revolutionary Guards drill, mocks an Israeli invasion, and they threaten to enrich uranium to weapons grade. Well, as we've been talking about, the latest intelligence was they were within 30 days of doing that. Israel's military is closely watching the war game staged this week by the different arms of Iran's Revolutionary Guards, aerospace, ground units, navy, and missiles, which Debka File reports are focusing for the first time ever on defensive scenarios for thwarting a possible Israeli attack, including the landing of Israeli troops. Now, there's another article prior to this on Debka File that very clearly is saying that Israel is loath to accept the solo role for any action against a nuclear Iran. Our guest that's coming on has talked a long time about the fact that Israel would be used as a tool to initiate a war in the Middle East. We talked about it a year and a half ago, Jack Decker. So it's interesting how this is going to shake out, because it seems like a little bit of disinformation. They're very closely watching it. They're already engaged in sabotage operations in Iran. So we'll see how this unfolds. Coming to us from Populist Press. Wow. Breaking. Assassination attempt thwarted. A heavily armed California man was taken into custody after he confided in law enforcement officers that he was driving to the White House to assassinate a number of evil high-profile business and political figures, court documents released Wednesday showed. Kuacha Jiang. Pause. Was pulled over December 21st on an interstate highway in Cass County, Iowa, for speeding and aggressive driving. They found in the suspect's vehicle, of course, an AR-15-style rifle, boxes of ammunition, loaded magazines, along with armor and medical kits. How convenient. Now, during the traffic stop, Jiang, pause, also described his frustration with the government, which was due to the sex abuse of children, some of which occurred by President Biden, the law enforcement officer wrote in a criminal complaint, according to the article. It's coming to us from the Daily Caller through Populist Press. I wonder how they're going to spin this to use it to further control mechanisms here in the United States. Coming to us from the New American. Study asserts that Arctic warming began early in the 20th century. Just want you to hear that again. Arctic warming began early in the 20th century. Comparison with regional records suggests a poleward expansion of subtropical waters since the end of the Little Ice Age in response to a rapid hydrographic reorganization in the North Atlantic. put in very clear parlance, the Arctic began warming before so-called global warming kicked in. Data shows that the water temperature in the region has risen by approximately 2 degrees Celsius since the early 1900s, and that the salinity of the water has increased as well. So this would be before, okay? What they're saying is the main contributions to global warming, just so we're clear. Look, the climate changes and it always will. And in fact, many people believe because of the diminished solar activity, we're headed actually into a what's called a minimum, a Maunder minimum, or even potentially Dalton minimum, where due to the lack of sunspots, we actually will have colder winters and more snow. And for those of you around here probably wondering that same thing right now. Also coming to us from the National Front, WorldNet Daily, Democrats want to cancel enhanced penalty for drive-by murders. Anybody want to guess where this bill was introduced? Travis, do you want to guess where this bill was introduced? Come on, it's super easy. Where do you think such a ridiculous, asinine bill to cancel the enhanced penalty for drive-by murders would be introduced? Where do you think?
From my distraction, I think you're going to have to hit the button.
Probably Washington State. Yeah, Washington State. And you know what's interesting? They want to repeal a law that provides enhanced penalties for murders committed in drive-by shootings because it targets gangs that were predominantly young and black. So now they're saying it's racist. Instead of, no, these are very violent crimes and drive-by shootings were killing a lot of innocent people. Let's not talk about that part of it. Let's talk about the fact that this is an agenda that communists always do to shrink the population in our prisons so that violent criminals are on the street helping to foment chaos so the communists can then ride in as the solution. This has happened in the former Soviet Union, happened in Venezuela, it has happened in China, and just you name your communist country. They empty the prisons, they lessen the sentences, they get the violent criminals out there because it helps to foment the chaos that brings the country to its knees so that the communists can take over. Unbelievable, but not really, because it's Washington State and the Democrats there, they really believe this stuff. And it didn't help, maybe, I don't, you would have thought, Travis, you know, you would have thought that they would, it would have got their attention that two of them got mugged violently here recently, the defunding the police guys, you know, that would have got somebody's attention. I don't know, but apparently not. So I just hope nobody gets killed by this bill that's been pre-filed being passed. Whew. Wow. All right. Also, jumping back to the international front, but still on a similar theme. Hang on. Travis, wait for it. Democrat lawmakers want to give the Taliban, no, Travis, not $9.4 billion, because that makes all the sense in the world. Democrat lawmakers on Capitol Hill want to respond to all this by handing the Taliban $9.4 billion after all of the things that occurred in that country. Monday, a group of mostly Democratic lawmakers wrote a letter to Joe Biden, pressing him to ease sanctions and unblock the Afghan central bank's foreign reserves. Okay, I'm not really good at like writing super long things, so let's just make this really. How about no? And magazine, Sam Faddis, thank you for bringing that to all of our attention. Incredible that we even have to report on that, but there it is. $9.4 billion to the Taliban. I gotta read another part of this letter here. We are also deeply concerned that sanctions against Taliban officials now in charge of governmental functions are creating a chilling effect for financial institutions and aid organizations serving Afghanistan. That's the point. Whew. The leader of the Taliban now, I want to step back for a second. The leader of the Taliban now was the head of the Sharia courts back in the 1990s when they were in charge. He's now the head. He's in charge. In that capacity, he enforced strictly Sharia law, which included barbaric public stonings, amputations, and essentially the diseducation, the de-education, the dumbing down of girls. Look, these guys really believe and want to become Sharia compliant. And if you've never read the Hudud, that is the criminal penalties under Sharia law, which includes such things as beheading and crucifixion for Christians who, quote, create mischief in the land, end quote. This is what these guys believe. And there's an argument over whether we should give them money or not. Okay, also on the international front, not to be outdone, the United Nations, coming to us from Jihad Watch, the United Nations demands that Poland allow unimpeded access to Muslim migrants trying to break through their border. The migrants are screaming Allah Akbar and hurling abuse at Polish border guards. How likely is it that they will become loyal, stable, productive citizens of Poland or any other European country, asks Robert Spencer, and I would agree. What a great question. So here's the thing. So the Russians effectively have a puppet government in Belarus right now. They're running illegal Muslim migrants through Belarus to try to break into Poland to destabilize Poland. Again, that same thing, create chaos on the ground there. And the Polish just said, no, we're not going to do that. We remember World War II in the Katyn Forest and what the Russians did to the Polish officers there. We remember what the communists did, especially following the war. We're not going to let that happen again. So they stopped them at the border. And now the United Nations is demanding, quote, Polish authorities grant this unimpeded access, end quote. Wow. Quote, we have expressed our position in several press releases and advocacy for access to the area under restrictions for all humanitarian organizations is constant, he stressed. Essentially, the UN is going to tell the Polish what their border is? Wow. And so, in this time that we're in, we just go back to chapter 2 of the Communist Manifesto, and we read very clearly there. And if I tell you what, Travis, you can pull that up right now. Let's pull up chapter 2 of the Communist Manifesto. In that chapter, four main things really stand out. And there's more in there, but four main things did. So Karl Marx wanted to abolish private property. He wanted to abolish the family. He wanted to abolish all truth and morality, because again, all these things foment chaos, makes people easier to control. But the fourth thing that he wanted to do was abolish nations and borders. Communist Manifesto, Chapter 2. If you get a chance, read it. Travis is pulling it up right now, and you can see it in the plain language. They're just following their manual, the Communist Manifesto. That's why they want to do this stuff. So it should make crystal clear sense why we need to fight back against every rearing of the ugly head of this stuff every time. Okay, now, want to talk next. I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. Shift gears just a hair, if you will. We have had a lot on this show about vaccines. But there's an article from Technocracy News. I'm going to post this up online. Quote, the government intel agencies behind digital vaccine passport IDs. Wow. In January 2021, tech giants such as Microsoft, Oracle, and MITRE Corporation announced their launch of the Vaccine Credential Initiative, VCI, in partnership with healthcare companies. On their website, the VCI describes itself as an alliance of private and public organizations dedicated to the development of the issuance of verifiable health credentials bound to an individual digital identity. Short version of this. They've largely hijacked the force and resources of the government, this group of technocrats. And now we find out through this article that this is just part and parcel of the Great Reset. Whew. And they tested this in Myanmar and other places. And according to the World Economic Forum's website, this is, again, the same people that are bringing you the Great Reset, but not us because we're not going to stand for that. Just like the VCI, the Common Project Foundation seeks to develop and launch a standard global model to enable people to securely document and present their COVID-19 status to facilitate international travel and border crossing. Folks, listen to me right now. This is intentional to cut off Christians who are standing against this tyranny. They're setting this up so you cannot buy or sell, you cannot travel unless you have this. They're saying it in their own writing now. This is not something 12 years ago where people are like, it'll never happen in America, Matt, just like the country would never get locked down, and we warned about this 5 years ago, and here we are. So pay attention to this stuff. Prepare accordingly. Apparently that made Travis smile that I got a little excited there. Okay, so in addition to this, and not to be outdone, apparently everybody's trying to outdo each other today. Coming to us from the National Pulse, Pfizer has partnered with China's vaccine passport platform and admits being proud to stand with Chinese leaders. So now you've got Pfizer partnered with the Chinese Communist Party payment platform, which is being used to implement vaccine passports as well. So wait a minute. Yes, you have a company sanctioned by the United States of America partnering with the largest global dictatorship. What could go wrong? Whew. And to put a little cherry on the top of that, also coming to us from the National Pulse, top Mitch McConnell staffer leads the Pfizer's lobbying charge to protect vaccine patent and block a bill holding Big Pharma accountable for fraud. You heard that correct. The top Mitch McConnell staffer is leading Pfizer's lobbying charge to essentially eviscerate any sort of accountability. Could it all be tied together? Travis, what do you think? Could it all be tied together? Small, yeah. All right, so lastly on the national front, coming to us from Understanding the Threat, H.R. 5665. This bill included as one of its authors, jihadi Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, this is according to the article, I'm quoting from the article now, who works directly with the designated foreign terrorist organization, Hamas, doing business as the Council on American Islamic Relations, and Communist Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from Illinois, of course. That last part was me. The U.S. federal government is catastrophically corrupted and is not going to right this ship, says John Guandolo. And he goes down to talk about how this bill, people are saying, don't worry about it. It's not going to make it through the Senate. That's not the point. It was voted out of the House and is aimed directly at crushing the unalienable right to free expression. Folks, this is how close we are right now. This should wake up every single American right now. So I'm going to post a lot of these articles up online. Please share them with your friends and your family. Again, if you get the opportunity, you can follow me on a whole bunch of different platforms. Travis does a fantastic job keeping us up on all his platforms, but the big one to remember is Gab. Also on MeWe, we're all over. You can just go at Matt Shea, go to Gab, and boom. Now, before I end the briefing, I want to bring up one thing. 3 years ago, when I was warning about this stuff, and I went to Republican leadership and I told them what was coming, and I said, they're going to attack me. You need to have my back. And you saw, everybody saw what happened, right? Our duty as Christians is to be the watchman on the wall, to give the warning. And when we give the warning, the blood is no longer on our hands. But we have a duty to give the warning. And so we need to give the warning as we're ushering in 2022, that this is going to be a year like no other in modern history. So much is on the table this year. And what works is when we stand tall and stand strong, stand courageous as Americans, do not comply, figure out our own ways to be self-reliant at the local level, we win and they back down. It happens every time. Question is, are you ready to stand with us? And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. And again, at Matt Shea, all across the web, Gab, MeWe, Getter, Parler. We're also on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and Amazon. You can listen to us on 106.5 FM and AM 1050 across most of eastern Washington, North Idaho, and parts of western Montana. We also have other stations that we broadcast through the American Christian Network out of Moses Lake, Ephrata, Yakima, Wenatchee, and the Tri-Cities. So we post this up on the Facebook page when we go live. You can see the different stations that we broadcast on. Share this with your friends and family. Get them informed. And everybody out there, Happy New Year. We're still patriots in a free country, at least in this part of the country anyway. All right, it is my pleasure to bring on right now one of my favorite people who is always direct with the truth every single time he has been here on Patriot Radio, Joel Skousen. Welcome once again to Patriot Radio. Joel Skousen is a political scientist by training, specializing in the philosophy of law and constitutional theory. He is the author of Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, and he also is the chief editor and founder for World Affairs Brief. Joel, it's great to have you on once again. How are you doing?
Well, good, Matt. It's good to be with you again.
Well, let's talk about 2022 coming in. I want to focus first on Ukraine and Russia, but I also want to bring in China as well. You've been talking about China and Russia particularly for many, many years. Catch the listeners up in case they don't understand kind of the broad overview, and then also what's very likely to happen here in the coming months.
Well, 2022 is going to be a year of war. I don't think it'll be World War III, but there's going to be at least two regional wars, one in Ukraine and one in Taiwan. It's very interesting how the Russian threat has been downplayed for so long since the so-called fall of the Soviet Union in 1989 and 90, that even good generals like General Mike Flynn is absolutely convinced that Russia's a paper tiger, that it's a declining society, and it's no threat at all. Now, he is very up on the Chinese threat, which is easy to do right now because they're in ascendancy. But the Russian threat is still much stronger than the Chinese threat in terms of nuclear throw weight for missiles, hypersonic missiles, maneuvering glide missiles, all of those things. Russia's really up on. They've got a military that is probably 95% up to our standards in terms of technology, and they have a lot of just a massive amount of forces on the ground, including tanks and fifth generation, fourth generation aircraft. So Russia's no paper tiger, and it doesn't appear to me as if that the U.S. is going to either defend Ukraine or Taiwan if and when these two things get hot this year. The U.S. only has one aircraft carrier group in the Adriatic Sea in the Med right now between Italy and Croatia. The USS Harry Truman. And it's just not enough firepower to even combat the air superiority which Russian fighters would have in the Ukraine region if this war goes hot. And it's interesting that, you know, the Israelis are always attacking Syria and Lebanon now, trying to provoke an Iranian response. They want to go to war with Iran. But it appears very clearly that the Israelis have telegraphed to the U.S. that that war with Iran is not coming soon. Otherwise, you'd have two aircraft carriers at least in the Persian Gulf. One aircraft carrier isn't enough to handle a positive military response to a Russian invasion in Ukraine. And one I pointed out in the World Affairs Brief is that Russia has four divisions opposite Kiev in Belarus. And that means that, and this is the first time they've had troops, not only in the Crimea to the south, but in the north, opposite Kiev, so that they could do a pincer movement. So I think that if they go into Ukraine this time, they're going for the whole country. They're not just going for eastern Ukraine. So it could be very serious.
It really certainly looks like that. And, you know, 250,000 troops surrounding Ukraine right now. For those that don't really understand military formations, you're talking about 25 divisions. And so this media report that came out, oh, they took 10,000 troops off the line. Well, it's like taking one division off when you still have 24 surrounding it. It doesn't materially mean much. But clearly, it seems like the Russians are delaying for a few weeks at least in their plan. How do you see this?
Well, yes, they've scheduled talks with the Biden administration in January, and so they clearly aren't going to move before then. But my suspicion, Matt, is that there's going to be a coordinated strike between China and Taiwan on Taiwan and the Russians in Ukraine, which guarantees that the U.S. would not have enough forces to handle both. And it would be an excuse for them to step down and say, well, we're just overcommitted. And it would certainly be the case that Israel attacked Iran, and Iran started to attack U.S. forces in the Middle East, which would take precedent over everything else because of the number of troops that we have. We don't have any troops to speak of in Ukraine. We don't have but about couple of dozen advisors, military advisors in Taiwan. So it's easy to walk away from those fights, wring your hands, go to the UN and say, oh, this is just terrible, and cry sanctions. But, China's in a position where sanctions really don't hurt her as much as they hurt the United States, because 80% of our products now come from China. And, of course, an invasion of Taiwan would cut off all of the chip manufacturers. 80% of the world's chip manufacturers are in Taiwan. And so if that stopped, this would really put a lock on U.S. auto production, computer production, all of those things because of the chips. And chip manufacturers are trying to build new factories because they know what's coming in Taiwan eventually, but they won't be ready for at least 3 years. So this could be a very, very serious problem. Despite the humanitarian tragedy that a huge attack on Taiwan would represent.
Well, I want to get back to Russia briefly. There have been very clear indicators that, again, a lot of people that don't really follow military movements wouldn't really understand, but, you know, the Russians are bringing hospital units up to the front. They're bringing air defense units up to the front. Very clear indicators that they may end up doing something. Now, the Russian New Year in the Russian, which is a big deal in the Slavic countries, but also the Russian Christmas, the Orthodox Christmas on January 7th, probably indicates they won't do anything before that. And like you said, before the talks. But again, why would the Russians do this now? Why would they provoke it now? Because a lot of people believe, oh, no, like you said, Russia's not going to do anything. They're just posturing, but it really doesn't look like that.
Well, we've got to remember that the Communist Party never really collapsed in the Soviet Union. They simply went underground. And they told all of the Eastern European states to fake their own demise. Leaders that wouldn't go along, like Ceausescu in Romania, were assassinated. And But even Erich Honecker on his deathbed in Chile said that Moscow gave me orders to let the riots in Leipzig, the student university in Leipzig, go forward. You know, when people did a documentary out of Russia about the fall of the Soviet Union, they said, you know, the only thing we really couldn't understand is where were the KGB? We were out there in Red Square, you know, supporting Yeltsin, and normally the KGB would be swarming around us, arresting people, and they weren't anywhere to be seen. And that's because it was a falsified, phony a fall of the Soviet Union so they could get Western aid and trade. But the point I want to make is that eventually they intend to take back all of the former Soviet states. And almost all of them, like Poland, used to have Lech Walesa in there who claimed to be for free markets and free unions, and he was a Soviet agent. When I visited Poland, I was asking people, you know, did you guys realize that Lech Walesa was a Soviet agent? And they said, oh, yeah, we all know this. Only in the West are you not told that. Václav Havel, the so-called famous reformer of Czechoslovakia, turned out to be a Soviet agent. And so you can't really tell how many of these current government leaders in these former Soviet states are actually, you know, really for the West or Soviet agents, because we know that because a lot of these nations have been brought into NATO, that puts Soviet spies right into NATO. They'll know all of our plans. And so I've always warned about, you know, bringing NATO into the former Soviet states. I think it's a trap.
It really seems that way. And the Russians are specifically focusing on their historic avenues of approach through Georgia, Abkhazia, yeah, and then also through the Baltic states, Poland and Ukraine.
Yes. You know, they intend to take armored divisions through all those and recapture the Soviet states, but not what our military is not preparing for is a nuclear preemptive strike. They keep thinking, well, it's going to be conventional. We're going to see tanks rolling into Poland and Ukraine, et cetera. No, we're not, except for this, which is similar to Hitler, you know, taking Czechoslovakia and Austria before he invaded Poland, which actually triggered World War II. But he was testing Western resolve to see how much he could get away with. And I think the Russians are doing the same thing in Ukraine. But as I pointed out in my World Affairs brief, Ukraine has always still been under communist corruption. The communist bureaucracy in all of these former Soviet countries still remained. You still took bribes. There was no freedom, you know, from the communist bureaucracy, even in Ukraine. And people like Prime Minister Tymoshenko was a Soviet puppet, even though she claimed to be right-wing and anti-Soviet. So you've really got to be careful, you know, when dealing with the former Soviet states.
You do. Let's shift gears now, Joel Skousen, to China. So I agree with you. I think this is very clearly coordinated. I don't think it's coordinated maybe in the details, but certainly the timing appears to be very coordinated. The Chinese are going to go for Taiwan. And I have had so many conversations, and it has a similar ring to it, and it sounds like this. Matt, the Chinese would never cut off trade because it's going to hurt them just as bad as it hurts us. How do you address that specific argument?
Well, China has always engaged in trade, not to moderate, but to build up their military-industrial complex. So that's why they steal all the technology that they can. I mean, they've stolen a lot. I mean, they've got the blueprints to the F-22. They've got the blueprints to nuclear submarines. They've got blueprints to our latest torpedoes. You know, they just steal it, and we let them steal it. That's the thing. We have over 300,000 students a year from China that come into our top technical universities. And they go back to China and use all that high-tech information, you know, to build the military-industrial complex. The whole purpose of that is not to build up a massive amount of trade. The purpose is to build up a world-class army that can take over. And what they intend to do is use a nuclear first strike to take out the U.S. and Britain militarily and NATO, and then blackmail the West into submission. And in order to do that, of course, you've got to have overwhelming nuclear forces, and that's why both Russia and China, which will be linked and allied together to do this first strike, will take that over. But then, you see, they don't destroy the infrastructure. They don't destroy American cities. They don't destroy the European and American economy. They blackmail them. This is their plan. And so that they then control a new world order, and they maintain the economic structure intact. So you see, for the Chinese, it doesn't mean destroying the West if you go to war. It means nuking the military so that you don't have to destroy the economy.
Mm.
And none of our leaders ever discussed this. In the national war colleges, they're all taught by globalists. They downplay China. They downplay Russia. They never talk about preemptive nuclear strike. It's incredible. It's just not on our radar. They believe
now
it's bad, mutual assured destruction.
That's where I wanted to go with this. You've brought up over the years that we actually have a policy that, to my knowledge, I've never seen anything to refute this, it's never been overturned or abrogated. We have a policy to absorb a first strike or effectively absorb a first strike.
That's absolutely true. In 1997, President Clinton signed Presidential Decision Directive 60, PDD 60, and it's still enforced. And what's really interesting is that this year I was reading, Bruce Blair and some other anti-nuclear pro-disarmament people talking about we need to stop the ability to do launch on warning. And I wrote back to them. I said, wait a minute. PDD 60 is still enforced. How can you be talking about no launch on warning? And, the guys were scratching their head and didn't realize that because nobody's wanted to talk about PDD 60 for so long, it simply disappeared. The military does not. President Trump didn't know about it. General Flynn doesn't know about it. And so the disarmament people have even been snookered by their own propaganda. They think that it can still happen until I've reminded them, no. Have you got any evidence that PDD 60 has been overturned? And they wrote back, no, we don't.
So that brings up the specter of World War III. Now, you said this isn't World War III. This is just preemptive moves prior to that. And the Chinese are just going to continue to seek to weaken the United States in the various ways they do because they treat every aspect of life as warfare, including trade, like we just talked about, including medicine and all these things. So what does this actually look like? What is their final plan? How does this look to an American maybe 3-5 years from now?
Well, there was a speech by General Hao Tian, defense minister of China, that was leaked in about 2011. I think the speech was clear back in 2007. We talked about wanting to use biological terror weapons to depopulate the United States and get more living space for people. And he talked about we're going to be ruthless. We're not going to be easy on them like the Nazis, but we're going to be ruthless. Now, this was a very important speech, but they haven't been able to develop the technology that develops a bioweapon that targets Westerners and doesn't target Easterners. And he talked about working with the Israelis, and the Israelis do a lot of work with the Chinese, and they transfer a lot of American technology, and that's how it gets transferred to the Chinese, is through Israel. But they talked about Israel trying to develop and work with them to get a virus or a bioweapon that would attack Arabs and not Israelis. And these have not worked. And that's what's important, is that means they've had to go back to the nuclear first strike concept of neutering the U.S. military so they could blackmail them into submission because they're not going to be able to depopulate with these viruses without them kicking back, to the Chinese. So what this looks like is that, first of all, you've got to have a scenario that requires the U.S. does go to war against China so that China can have an excuse to nuke the U.S. military. That can't happen in Taiwan. We just don't have enough interest in Taiwan to justify defending it or starting World War III over it. We don't have enough interest in Ukraine to justify that, but we do in Korea. We've got 27,000 troops in Korea. If you see the North Koreans attack South Korea, with 2-million-man army, with 60,000 artillery troops opening up on Seoul, we're only 60 miles away, you're going to see the U.S. have to intervene, probably with tactical nuclear weapons, to stop that invasion. And that would provide China an excuse to say, you started a nuclear use of nuclear weapons, and they launch on our military forces. So I'm telling people in my prediction that if you see a war start in North Korea, you'll probably see World War III within 2 weeks.
So with this, What can Americans expect? So let's say Russia does invade Ukraine shortly after the Olympics, China invades Taiwan, or you know, some timing right then, or maybe even during the Olympics.
No, it'll be after the Olympics. They don't want to damage their international reputation until afterwards.
I would agree. I think that they're going to do exactly what Germany did. They did the Olympics, and then they did it afterwards. Yeah. So let's say that they do this. What are they going to do to the United States? Are they going to try to do, you know, increase the cyber warfare against the United States? And then what would be something that people would know, hey, we know something pretty dramatic is going to happen, maybe even an EMP to the, you know, United States. How can we be warned ahead of time? How can we see things happening and say, okay, this is a pretty good indicator it's headed in that direction?
Well, an EMP strike, when it comes, will turn off all the electricity, no television, radio, and cell phones will start going down, you know, within a week when the diesel generators run out. And many of them may be damaged by the EMP itself. So if all that's happened, you're probably going to see nuclear first strikes fall within 15, 20 minutes after that. It's going to be like a 1-2 punch. So that's not a good indicator because if there's no electricity, your ability to get information, and the internet goes down, your ability to get information is zero now. Okay. So that's why I'm saying a war in South Korea is the only real trigger event that you're going to see that will give you a couple of weeks' notice. Because it alone requires that the U.S. intervene. And since China is the one that triggers this war, China directs North Korea, this would be the confrontation that could justify China doing a preemptive nuclear strike on U.S. military forces.
So in the last 8 minutes that we have left, how can people prepare for what's coming in? Maybe there's some other information, too, that you want to put out to the listeners, but I really want to hear the solutions. How can we prepare for what's coming?
Well, people have to realize that nobody is thinking World War III. They're talking about China invading Taiwan, but nobody's thinking this could turn into World War III. And I think there's only a 20% chance that any of these could trigger World War III. And that would only happen if the U.S. directly really went after militarily China. Then it could trigger. So, but how do you prepare? In the first place, you've got to be away from any major nuclear targets. I mean, look at the Seattle area. It's just full of 10 or 11 military bases, including the Trident submarine bases. Going to be a massive nuclear holocaust that are going to blanket the entire Seattle area. So people within your listening are going to need to strategically relocate, and that's why I wrote that book. People need to get out of the San Diego area. They need to get out of San Francisco area. Those are all major nuclear targets, not only industrial but military as well. But a nuclear target really is only about 10 miles away from the blast. Now, you get a place like Seattle where there's dozens and maybe 20 or 30 nuclear weapons going off to dig out those submarine pens. It's going to be a massive amount of fallout happening because there'll be ground bursts, not just air bursts. Air bursts have fairly small amount of fallout, but ground bursts have tremendous amounts. And so people in eastern Washington are going to be okay, other than directly downwind from Fairchild Air Force Base, which is a major refueling base and nuclear target. But everyone really in the United States needs to develop a safe room in basement space with a fallout shelter. You're going to have at least 10 to 12 inches of concrete block overhead, and you can do that in a small corner of the basement or other things, but you need fallout protection, and you need to have a meter. You need to know when the fallout's increasing again or when it goes down and when it's safe to come out of the shelter. Radiation takes about 2 weeks to dissipate, but if another wave comes in from Japan or wind shift and it comes from Seattle, or wind shifts and it comes from San Diego, then you need to get back in a shelter. So having a safe room and a shelter is very important. But also, what I want to emphasize, Matt, is that because this will be preceded by an EMP strike, and it's the nuclear doctrine of Russia and China, this is the maximum cyber warfare, is to throw an EMP strike and take down the grid and the internet and all the cyber communications. They all die. And so don't be into digital currencies. Don't be into Bitcoin. You'll lose everything when the internet goes down because you can't trade. In fact, banking will cease to go on because so much of it is done, you know, in internet. So you've got to stockpile cash. You've got to stockpile food. and you've got to have, radiation meters, and you've got to be prepared for social unrest, meaning that you've got to be able to hide some of these things. We'll be the Jews of World War III, those of us who know about conspiracy and know about the deep state, et cetera. They'll try to lock us up. And if you think martial law under this COVID thing is bad, you wait to what happens when there's nuclear war. It'll be real martial law. So people can do this and prepare, but they can't be in the Seattle area to prepare. They got to get out.
We have a lot of people that have already tried to move to this side of the mountains. It's one of the fastest growing areas in the country right now. I find it interesting, though, a lot of people seem to think that they're just going to do it on their own. It's just going to be them and a couple family members, and they're going to be okay. But really, all of these things kind of imply a bigger group than that.
Well, not really. I have worked in the field of strategic relocation and preparedness for over 40 years, Matt, and I can tell you that people have formally communal sharing-type organizations between big groups always factionalized and split up because of infighting. They never stay together. The ones that work the best are where every individual family prepares on his own and you informally network with other people for support. So that if one is under a threat, he knows that he can go to another friend's house. But if you get all in one compound and you name it the Citadel or something like that, first of all of the major newspapers start to target you and blackball you, and people know where you are. So you've got to be smart about this, not to get into dependency relationship. Everybody's got to prepare to try to do it all, and then network informally with other people. Know who you can trust. Know where you can go. Know where you can maneuver. Know who you can borrow machinery from. But whenever you get a communal type relationship, it all depends on the people that have money in it. And everybody takes advantage of them, and they end up pulling out eventually. And it's just a mess. So remember, informal networking is the way to go, not communal relationships.
This is probably the most important point of the entire show right now. When I was reading through your materials and just understanding, this is what makes the most sense. You can informally share information and supply chains and everything, but it's up to the individual families to be ready and take care of themselves.
And it pays to be in the same general area. I mean, that's what's happening in northern Idaho and around Spokane. You're getting a lot of preppers moving into the area, and that's good. But they don't all have to live in the same neighborhood. That's important. You don't want to be targeted.
Amen. Joel, in the last 2 minutes that we have left, can you tell the listeners a little bit about World Affairs Brief, where they can go to get more information and learn more about you?
Yes, certainly. The World Affairs Brief I put out every Friday, and I analyze the world news situation from the aspect of what the deep state is doing. I am an expert in conspiracy, so I give conspiracy facts as well as theory, and the reason theory is important is because conspiratorial illegal acts are hidden behind the veil of national security. And so we aren't going to ever have all the information on the Kennedy assassination or the deep state pulling off of 9/11 and how they loaded those buildings with explosives. But we know enough to really tell and inform people that the deep state is very powerful and we're probably not going to beat it. I have one comment, and by the way, worldaffairsbrief.com is the website. And on the left-hand side, there's a red label that says request a sample. So if you want to find out how to subscribe, it's only $1 a week. And just click on request a sample. It tells you how to subscribe. You get the current brief that the synopsis is on the front page. You get that whole current brief, about 16 pages of dynamite information, including a prep tip every week from my son, Andrew, who's an engineer. And he's got a marvelous amount of information on preparedness.
Well, Joel, you said you had one more comment. We've got about 30 seconds or so. Yeah.
Yeah. You were saying before I came on that if we protest, if we refuse to go along with this, they'll back down. I'm not sure that's true. They are backing down, for example, in public school mandates for the COVID vaccine in San Diego, and people protested and said, we're not going to do this. And they backed down, but they'll be back. This is a very powerful agenda. They want control. They want to destroy populations and people's health. So don't be optimistic that this COVID stuff is going away. Even if the mandate's overturned by the courts, which I think there's only about a 50-50 chance, private companies are going to push this thing to death. Even airlines are going to push this. So we need to prepare to start to escape establishment, you know, homeschool, home birth, other things. Prepare to get out of the establishment. I think that's the only safety long term.
I would agree with you that creating that alternative economy is critical. And in fact, talking with, we have a very large Slavic population here, talking with people that escaped the former Soviet Union as Christians who were persecuted, that was one of the key ways they survived in the former Soviet Union, was through creating these informal networks and alternative economies.
Yeah.
Joel Skousen, thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Blessings to you and Happy New Year.
Thank you, man. Good to be with you.
All right, worldaffairsbrief.com. Check it out. I subscribe. And great information every single week. Also, what he said, too, about, yes, they're backing down right now, but we still need to be preparing for the worst. That is correct. We do. We need to fight now, but we need to prepare for the worst. And I believe that the Lord is creating safe havens around the country based on some of the things that we just talked about. So figure that out. Take a look at the book, Strategic Relocations, and look where, what part of the country are you near that that might be the case? Or maybe you have your own family group in an area of the country that already is thinking this way. But either way, it's enough talk. Let's start doing, and let's preserve this republic. This is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one. Keep up the fight.